From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on Tuesday night when Rochester City Council voted unanimously to approve the first executive director of the Police Accountability Board. They chose Connor Dwyer Reynolds, a Rochester native who's an attorney and a lecturer at Yale. And there had been some doubt about the vote going into Tuesday night. It followed several days of unease after what had become a tense confirmation hearing last Thursday. Prior to that meeting last week, Reynolds had submitted a 10-page legal memo asserting that the PAB is a wholly independent body, non-subordinate as an agency of the city. It's a non-subordinate agency of the city, is what he said. And several council members disagreed with a belief that the board is only assured independence from the police department, not necessarily council. So before that vote on Tuesday, maybe some questions, and council members expressed a need to move forward nonetheless. It became a unanimous level of support and a strong showing from city council, even among some of the members who expressed doubt going in. They said there needs to be harmony between council and the PAB, and there needs to be productive relationships on all sides going forward. So how does this new executive director see the role of the Police Accountability Board? It's our first conversation with Connor Dwyer Reynolds, the executive director of the Rochester PAB, who's on the line with us now. Connor, welcome, and thanks for being with us on the program.
Evan, it's a pleasure being with you.
And Shawnee Wilson is with us, chair of the Rochester Police Accountability Board. Shawnee, welcome back to the program.
Hi, glad to be here.
Shawnee, we've talked in the past about the need to find the right person in this role. You think you've done it?
Yes, I think so.
Tell me a little bit about the process before we talk to Connor about what sort of made this happen and why this is the right person in your mind, Shawnee.
Sure. So a couple of months to comb through. So, you know, we started the process from scratch. Like, we've never had to find a police accountability board director before or, you know, have a police accountability board in the first place. And so we had an exhaustive search, and we were able to attract over 150 candidates. So, you know, we, you know, combed through everyone and made sure that we, you know, had a process that was fair and equitable for everyone. We had some really great candidates from across the country, actually. However, you know, we settled on Connor because he is a local Rochesterian. He is able to, you know, as you can tell, you know, when we are needing somebody to have a good communication strategy, you know, somebody that's worked for President Obama and helped craft those communication strategies was really going to be pivotal. It was going to be key in order to kind of help us move forward as a police accountability board. We also wanted somebody that could help us on the ground, right, that knew what it was like to get kind of like in the trenches and get dirty with the rest of, you know, those that have been working on the Police Accountability Board for a while, like myself, and wasn't afraid of some really, really hard work. We wanted somebody that was able to, you know, talk about, you know, the issues and know them very well. You know, he's worked with Judge Carlton Reeves as a federal court in Mississippi and he's helped manage some casings involving police misconduct and discrimination against police officers. So, you know, and really, I mean, you know, we all really just like Connor as a person, and we think that he's easy to work with, and you know that he also can work with Black and Brown leaders, and that's also very important, right? Amplifying Black voices is probably the most important thing we were looking for. So, we really think we found the right candidate.
Connor, tell me a little bit about who Judge Carlton W. Reeves is, because we're going to hear his voice in just a second.
The Honorable Carlton Wayne Reeves is a very close friend and mentor of mine. He's one of the most brilliant judges in the entire United States. For years, he's been taking bold stands, doing justice down in the Southern District of Mississippi, and he couldn't be more excited about this Police Accountability Board's potential to be a national model for the country.
He was kind enough to introduce you during the swearing-in, a ceremony that happened via Zoom, and I want to listen to some of that.
I certainly hope that everyone realize that this is a great moment for Rochester to set the example, because our country, our cities, our communities need a guiding light. They need that example, because right now we're wandering in the wilderness all over this country with respect to the police relationship with the people with whom they serve. And it's a two-way street, because the public has to respect the police as well. And I have no doubt that Connor Dwyer Reynolds is the person for this task at this moment in time.
The work continues, and I hope to do that work in a way that honors all the sacrifice and commitment from generations of Rochesterians to get to this moment. The work continues.
So there you have it, and now it's official, and I want to talk to you, Connor, about how you see the work, how you see the importance of independence, and how that all sort of works together. First, though, tell me how this came onto your radar. I mean, it's not like you're unfamiliar with what's been going on in your native Rochester, but give me a sense for the process that led you here.
Well, look, at Yale, I teach a lot about how administrative agencies work, so it's part of my job to keep an eye out about what the most exciting developments are. And, you know, when this city was crafting the legislation back in 2019, I had some concerns. You know, there's civilian oversight boards that existed across the country and have failed, largely, to create a better system of public safety. And we've seen that failure happen in Rochester for generations. And so, you know, I was a skeptical when this new legislation was coming around. But after that referendum vote, I really took a look closely at what the legislation said, and just the remarkable set of powers, the real sense of commitment that the law gave to this new institution. And then, you know, honestly, when I saw who the mayor, the city council, and the Police Accountability Board Alliance had took and decided to place in leadership of this organization, especially Dr. Celia McIntosh as vice chair and then Shawnee Wilson as chair, it was clear that everyone was working together to make this thing a real success, not just something that people could say we did and just put it in the corner. This thing was going to be real. And so when I was paying attention, I dug into the details, I thought, this has a chance to change my hometown forever. And that's when I applied.
I take the point that when you look around the country and you see models of reform, there haven't been a whole lot of instances you can point to and say, well, this works, or this really made change. I also take the point, as Rochester City News has reported extensively, that we've been in that loop in Rochester for decades. But if you're looking at what's happening here, you also have to look, Connor, at what a judge has said about disciplinary power. I know that's not everything, and we will talk about that. But how important is it to you that the PAB can or cannot offer disciplinary review of police officers and their actions?
It's extremely important. Let's be clear. So much of what Rochesterians want is true accountability for officer wrongdoing, a process that's transparent and a process that leads to real consequences. And so, you know, I hope and I expect us to get the powers that we need back from this court decision. We'll need them to do everything that the citizens expect us to do. But I want to just emphasize, even without those powers, we still can be the hub for reimagining public safety in Rochester.
Is there something that could change the disciplinary power scenario going forward?
Well, obviously, you know, there's this lawsuit, and we're going to be hopefully hearing from the next level of court sometime in the beginning of next year. But obviously, you know, there's also legislative changes that could happen at the state level that might address some of these things. And so that's why I'm part of a New York State Bar task force that's hopefully going to be helping folks figure out what the right next steps are there.
Okay, so let's talk about how you see the role within the community. The controversy before Tuesday, to the extent it was controversial, or at least the disagreement perhaps with counsel, was on the independence of the board as you saw it. Independent from RPD, yes. Independent from city council, why did you write that memo, and what did you make of some of the concerns raised by counsel prior to the vote this week?
Well, first, you know, the writing of the memo was part of a back and forth between some staff about how to deal with some specific budgetary issues and internal processes. And it's important to know that because everything that we've been talking about with regards to, you know, the independence issues, whatever, that's part of an ongoing conversation. Look, everyone involved, from city council to the Police Accountability Board, wants to follow the law, wants to follow the law that people overwhelmingly voted for. And it's going to take time to figure out how to translate the text of the law into details and procedures moving forward. You know, everyone's new to this. This is a whole new agency, and figuring things out is going to take some time. And I think what, you know, we all figured out through that unanimous vote to confirm me is that everyone's committed to figuring these things out together and building those clear lines of communication that allow us to do that. That's my top priority.
I'm not certain, having communicated with some members of Rochester City Council, that despite their vote for you, there is total harmony on the issue of independence. But I'm sure, you know, everyone feels that that was not as central as frankly, finding a director that they think is the right person. Going forward, though, do you see any possible issues with council on the subject of independence? I mean, is there still any concern about your views versus their views and how that may play going forward?
You know, I'm not concerned about it because city council has made clear to me, you know, both through that vote and through individual conversation with city council members, that talking is the first thing to do. And I'm certain that we're going to be figuring out all these details in a way that allow the Police Accountability Board to do the work that city council wants it to do.
Talking to Connor Dwyer Reynolds, the executive director of the Rochester Police Accountability Board. So in looking at what doesn't work versus what works, explain for the listeners a little bit more about your feeling that when you see the models around the country and you see the models that have not really produced change, why that is. What has been the common factor that has prevented communities from finding real substantive change on this issue?
I'd say there's three big reasons other places haven't succeeded in the way that we want to. The first is that they lack the legal power to conduct investigations that are thorough, independent, and lead to real consequences. And so that's usually a matter of them having legal powers. The city charter gives the Rochester Police Accountability Board the necessary powers to do so, you know, to create processes by which, you know, ordinary Rochesterians who feel wronged by the police department can not only come to a place where they can be heard, but can get the results and consequences that they want to happen. So that's very important. And obviously, you know, that legal power is still up in the air with regards to this court process. But at least on paper, we've got that so many other communities simply don't have. But there's two other things that lead to failure. The second is not having a body that is truly community-led, you know, really represents the diversity of a community. Only a slice of the community is in charge. Well, look at our Rochester Police Accountability Board membership right now. You know, from Dr. Bob Harrison all the way to Ida Perez, you know, you have people that represent a diversity of views on everything, but especially on public safety and policing. You know, the members of our board, it's a black and brown led board, majority black and brown board, looks like our city, but also, you know, they're experts in public safety. They're experts in spiritual safety. They're experts in working with the police. They're experts in being police. So many other civilian oversight boards don't have that kind of depth of experience baked right into the leadership. So we have that too. And the third thing that so many other places don't have is the resources to get the job done. You know, you can have the perfect process in theory, but if you don't have the staff and resources to get it done, it's not going to work. And so that's a thing that I am certain we're going to get in Rochester too in the coming months and years.
I know you've heard some of the debate within the community about the makeup of the board, and I take the point on the diversity of the board and the diversity of experiences, professions, life experience, all kinds of different backgrounds. But some members of policing have said, why not a retired police officer? Why not someone from law enforcement or public safety on that board? How do you feel about that?
Well, first, I think it's a best practice, you know, to ensure that the people who are being subject to disciplinary hearings do not have someone that they work with or someone who directly, you know, works in their line of work determining whether or not they're going to be subject to discipline. That's something that the community decided on, and that's where we're at. But that doesn't mean that our work is going to exclude or ignore perspectives of police officers. Quite the opposite. You know, we have the legal power and duty to ask the police department to assign us someone to help us understand the details of police work. You know, if you speak to the members of this board, they are so focused on things like officer trauma and officer safety, and that's going to be a pillar of our work. And also you're going to see it when we do outreach and we look to address specific policies, we're always going to be listening to officers because they have an important perspective on all this. And that's why one of the first meetings that Chair Wilson and I had was with Chief Harriet Sullivan to build that relationship from day one.
Well, you know, it might have been a year. I'm trying to think of the last time I talked to the police union about some of their concerns about the PAB. I mean, it was a while back, maybe a year and a half ago, and one of the things that Mike Mazzeo said in this program was, if you have a police accountability board that has too much disciplinary power or too much power in general, you might have police officers who are scared to do their job because they might be misinterpreted by a board as acting inappropriately. And you don't want officers nervous about doing what they think they are trained to do. How do you feel about that criticism?
Well, you know, I think the best thing for police officers in our community is to have an open, transparent disciplinary process that the community respects, right? You know, the reason this board came about is because people didn't trust the current process of discipline and oversight, right? And that trust clearly is showing fractures in our community. And what better way to build trust with the police than to have everybody agree that when something bad happens, we know it's going to be taken care of the right way, and we're going to know all the steps from investigation all the way to discipline were thoroughly done. And that is the mission of this board. So I understand those concerns, but I think they're going to not play out.
Okay, fair enough. Have you spent time, you know, maybe riding along with officers or spending time with officers during their work? Is that something that's on your agenda?
So it's actually part of the Police Accountability Board city charter. Requirements are to educate ourselves on that in-depth level with how policing happens. So I'm looking forward to doing that personally and looking forward to making sure that everyone involved learns and knows the details of police work.
Where do you see the biggest disconnect between police and community relations right now?
You know, it's about priorities. You know, accountability, as I understand it, accountability is making sure that the public's priorities match up with their government officials, right? That's democracy, making sure that the people who are our public servants serve us. And so I think the biggest disconnect right now is that there's so many different sections of our community that aren't at the table when we're discussing big questions like how should the police perform, you know, who should be first responders, how should we allocate public safety dollars. You know, there's just so many people that just haven't been at the table, haven't been heard. And so it's not clear that, you know, all of our government processes, you know, are lining up perfectly with the public's priorities. And so, you know, I think that's probably the biggest problem. And it's also why the Police Accountability Board is so great, because we can be that hub for making sure that those voices are at the table moving forward.
Talking to Connor Dwyer Reynolds, the executive director of the Rochester Police Accountability Board, just confirmed this week. And Shawnee Wilson, the chair of the board. And listeners, if you want to call the program, you can do that. It's toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're calling from Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections@WXXI.org. It is coming up on 6 months since the killing of George Floyd. This country has gone through a lot this year, and we're talking about police-community relations, the work and the role and the mission of the Police Accountability Board, and how the board and its executive director will try to execute that mission going forward in a community that has had a lot of tension this year. So listeners, if you've got questions or comments about how to improve police-community relations, if you've got questions about how the board's going to do its work and how Connor sees his role, how Shawnee sees the role as the chair of the board, we can take your comments on that. I've got a few emails, which I'll get to in just a moment. But let me ask you a little bit. In fact, I want to ask both of you. I'll start with you, Connor, on this. There are questions, I think, about how we figure out what the community wants. I mean, you just mentioned it's about priorities. It's about having the community priorities in mind. Well, the city of Rochester in October put together a survey on policing. And when we look at the survey, the criticism that was reported by Rochester City News, among other outlets, was that when you read the questions, that they really did seem sort of stacked up a little bit here. I'm going to read a couple of questions that were on these 11-question survey, and I'd like to talk to you about whether you think we're actually getting good, useful information here. First of all, one of the questions, quote, community policing is a model outlined in President Obama's 21st policing document that encourages police officers to be assigned to a particular neighborhood so they can become familiar with the neighbors and build relationships with residents. Do you support community policing? Next question. Do you believe community policing can be achieved without having specific municipal buildings and neighborhoods dedicated to policing efforts and other neighborhood initiatives? It's hard to think of people hearing that question and going, yeah, we can do it without those buildings. I mean, the way that question is written, I'm sure people are going, well, no, we probably do. Well, that probably relates to the kind of debate about community substations and more. Question five, as you may be aware, we are at a crossroads with our police department. We recently installed a new interim police chief. Do you support the city providing her with resources needed to build those police community relations that would include working with the community? Who's going to say no? So, Connor, I think Rochester City News was keying in on the idea that the survey was less designed to really kind of get into the minds of where the community is with policing and more designed to say, hey, look at these results. People want us to do what we wanted to do in the first place. How did you see it?
Well, what I'll say is, you know, first, I can't speak to, you know, the intent behind the survey or anything like that. You know, I have been working with Mayor Warren on some of these task force things, and it's clear that, you know, she wants to collect data. She wants to collect data on this community when it comes to public safety, and that's so important, and any first steps we can take are worthwhile. What I will say is, you know, listening to, you know, some of the feedback from city council, some of the feedback from the community, it's clear that we need more data. We just need so much more data, and the Police Accountability Board is the perfect tool to start collecting that data. You know, we have a duty under the city charter to survey the community, and I look forward to fulfilling that duty through some really quality polling and surveys so that we can get done, hopefully, in the next, you know, the coming months. But, you know, even on this task force work, this work on this governor's executive order, which I want to talk more about, we have to engage the community. We have to engage the community, get qualitative data, hear people's stories, center their voices, and make sure that those voices are being understood and heard by people in power. So, again, to wrap up on this survey thing, we need more data, and the Police Accountability Board is looking to gather it.
Shawnee, when you hear those survey questions from last month, do they sound even-handed to you?
I wouldn't necessarily say even-handed. I thought that it was just another way of gathering data. You know, I mean, I think we have a lot of work to do as far as data gathering. You know, I'm not going to comment on the way that they gathered the data. I think that there's, you know, I'm just going to focus on the PAB's work and say that, you know, I'm also, you know, working with Connor on the governor's executive order with the mayor, and I'm really excited about some of the work that we're going to be doing as far as data gathering with the Police Accountability Board, you know, getting stories from the community, you know, because stories are what matter, and hear what the community, and I'm excited that the governor made it such an integral part of the executive order, getting a public feedback, because that's when we really start to hear what the public wants. And, you know, so that's really something that I'm really looking forward to.
Okay. Well, I think I can say it a little bit more comfortably maybe than our guests can. I think that survey was silly. It was stacked. It was the kinds of questions where the answers should be obvious. You know, I mean, it's like saying, would you like neighbors who are kind and bake cookies every day or not? Well, yeah, that would be great. I mean, the questions were not designed to me to really peel back any complexity. And And I'm not just bringing this up in sort of a way to kind of poke at the city or to make it an academic exercise. It really matters, because right now there are questions around the country about what we do in regards to policing to sort of get it right. The first email I have is from a listener named Charles, who says, I want to know what your guests think about defunding police. Well, that's an example of where this country and where various communities, there's not monolithic views on this. Mm-hmm. Clearly, some congressional Democrats felt like they were hurt by that issue in the recent campaigns. But even though the word defunding can be confusing and maybe have different shades of meanings. And so how we get information about what the community wants, and to Connor's point about what the priorities truly are, it's more complex than just putting 11 questions out saying, are police, you know, do you support police having the resources they need? Well, who's going to say no? So, Connor, let's answer Charles' question first. He wants to know, and I know, again, I know it's not as simple as this, but Charles says, where do your guests stand on defunding police?
Well, I want to make clear what the board's stated mission is. You know, it's reimagining public safety. And, you know, I think some people might react to that by saying, well, that doesn't mean anything. That's not true. Reimagining public safety is about fundamental changes to the system, seeing policing as interconnected with so many other parts of how our city government operates and how people in this community live their lives. And so it's not cutting around the corner, cutting at the edges, not looking at small reforms. It's looking at the big picture. And, you know, filling in the details of what reimagining public safety is going to look like has to involve engaging the community in the long run, gathering that kind of in-depth, even-handed data, Evan, that I think you and a lot of people are looking for. And so it's going to take time to fill in the details, but the mission is fundamentally reimagine public safety.
Okay. Shawnee Wilson?
Well, I know you and I have spoken about this before, Evan. So, you know, what I'll say is I'll kind of get to the, you know, what kind of brought the bigger vision of the board, you know, kind of get, you know, kind of, you know, speaking about, you know, people that I know and that patients that I've had and that, you know, a lot of people, you know, when we talk about defunding, you know, I like to say reframing or reimagining. I think it's like just like taking a telescope and, you know, kind of like focusing like on one specific thing and then kind of making it a lot larger and a lot wider. You know, a lot of people want to feel safe. You know, people don't feel safe in certain neighborhoods of the city, you know, and I think it's really difficult to tell somebody that you know, has lost their, you know, their loved one to gun violence that, you know, we want to defund the police. I'm just going to say that right now. You know, however, you know, one of the things that we do need to focus on is, you know, how can funds be reallocated so that, you know, we can start addressing some of those things that are causing gun violence in the first place, or causing, like, you know, poverty, or causing, you know, these mental health calls and mental health arrests, or, you know, things that we know that are, you know, draining the system and that, you know, are contributing to gun violence that we need to deal with right now, and kind of allocating those funds to that, to the system, or education or information, or making sure that people have just enough to live. And so I think if we start dealing with, we think about it that way, I think that people are a lot more agreeable that there do need to be those reimagining, reallocating resources, and just having a bigger discussion about, you know, how policing and police safety is happening around here.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, there isn't a whole lot of support for having no police anywhere. I mean, that is sort of a utopian future that may be achievable in a more equal society, but that's not what we're living in right now. But there are varying shades of support for some of the various reforms and changes and reimaginings and reframings that our guests are talking about here. And listeners, we're open to taking your comments or questions about that if you like. But we're talking about a wide range of the work ahead for the Rochester Police Accountability Board and the new executive director. It's Connor Dwyer Reynolds who's with us. Shawnee Wilson is the chair. She is with us. It's 844-295-TALK. If you want to comment or join the conversation, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994, or you can email the program connections@WXXI.org. I'm going to read more of your emails after this, our only break of the hour, and we're right back with them on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, it's 50 years for Garth Fagan Dance. This weekend marks the 50th anniversary, and we're going to talk to Garth Fagan himself, along with some members of the critically acclaimed company, an icon in the arts world and a legend in the dance world, here and really around the world. Let's talk to Garth Fagan next hour as they celebrate 50 years on Connections. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Rick writes to us to say, Evan, as your guests discuss reimagining public safety, what role will the PAB have in changing how RPD officers are recruited and trained? That is from Rick. As I toss that question to Connor and Shawnee, from Rick, let me add a little context as well here. Shawnee and I have talked about this. This is the first time I've had a chance to talk to Connor about this. But Pew Research finds that police officers are out of step with the mainstream of the country when it comes to race in this country. And what that means is 57% of white Americans believe that this country has done enough on race relations to kind of create equality. 91% of white police officers say that. 91%. That's 34 points higher by percentage that white police versus white Americans in general feel like, haven't we done enough on race? I mean, it's almost all. I mean, it's more than 9 out of 10. So police are out of step on race with the mainstream of the country. Rick wants to know, what do your guests think about the PAB changing how officers are recruited and trained? Connor?
Well, I just want to say, Evan, you've said those statistics so many times at this point, I just assume you have them memorized.
Some of them I do, because and they're important, aren't they?
They are. No, they are. They are. And it's important that people understand that this is about culture. This is about culture. You know, this is not going to be adding a few new rules and regulations. This is not going to be just about having a new disciplinary process. It's how do we change the way that culture, the police department's internal culture is operating, period. And we're going to be looking to make that culture transparent, understood by the community, so that we can start implementing some of the policies and procedure changes when it comes to training, when it comes to recruitment, to get these things done.
Is there, I'm trying to ask this sort of very carefully here, but Rick is sort of implying that we've been recruiting the wrong people. Do you feel that way, Connor?
You know, I don't want to leap to any conclusions before studying the data. That's the last thing that I should be doing. What I do want to say is that I've heard time and again from people across the community that we need to have police officers on the force who understand the communities that they are trying to keep safe. And whether it comes to, you know, getting the right officers selected or the officers there on the force, training them to understand the community, that's obviously something that has to get done, has to change.
Alex writes to us to say, unfortunately, I see whatever work that your guests are going to do, politics will rear its ugly head. What experience does your guest have in working with boards? Does he see himself as the leader of the board, answerable to the board, or as a city employee? Connor?
Well, I am a city employee, but, you know, the law is clear. I report to the board. I serve to execute their vision. And so at the end of the day, you know, the board is here, and, you know, Chair Wilson can talk about this more, but, you know, we serve the community. And, you know, there are, of course, you know, politics is always going to happen. There's no doubt about that. But the way that you get past those political discussions is by being open and transparent and being deeply linked with the community. And so having a board that's drawn from the community, that's the best thing that we can have in the first place. But then having my work work in a way that is constantly engaging with and centering community voices, I think that's how we're going to get past a lot of those tough political choices, by knowing that the community is with us and behind us.
Okay. Shawnee, how do you see the relationship between the board and the executive director?
So, you know, I'm here, you know, hi, you know, so, I mean, you know, when we talk about working in tandem with Connor, you know, we've been very intentional to do so because we are a bunch of leaders, community leaders that have been doing this for, you know, a very long time. And, you know, I've not been doing this for, you know, 25, 30 years, like the rest of my counterparts on the board. But, you know, we have decades of experience in between all of us. And it is very important that Connor understands that, and that the community understands that, and that we are absolutely committed to making sure that this works. And so I agree, you know, that we, you know, as long as we redirect back to the community, it is a community effort. And that, remember, we are stating that, you know, Police Accountability Board exists for a reason, and that is that the community wanted this to happen. We had 50 plus agencies within the Police Accountability Board Alliance working for many years to make sure that this happens. And, you know, we have to keep framing this as the urgent matter, the emergency that it is. You know, we need to make changes to make sure that we are answering the community needs. So, you know, that's basically what I'll say. You know, we love doing this work. We enjoy it. I enjoy it. And we really are just looking forward to continuing to do the work.
And I'll just say on that, Evan, you know, during earlier this week, there was a Speak to Council session where just we had dozens and dozens of people expressing their support for the board's choice for executive director. But almost all those messages also said the following, that, you know, there was a message of support for the leadership of this board, the black women leading this board. And so I hope the community knows that who that leadership is. And when they think about the board, they remember that leadership.
Yeah, fair enough. I think it's an important point. Before I get back to listener feedback here, I just want to ask you a couple questions. I'm not sure you're going to want to answer them, but that's fine. That's my job, and you'll have yours here, Connor.
I got to deal with that, Evan.
I know you do. did the city make the right decision in dismissing Chief Singletary?
That is a tough question, Evan. But what I'll say is that, you know, I think that holding people accountable for their actions has to be the way that every single person in this community operates. City Council has this investigation ongoing. I think that we're going to find out the answers through that investigation about, you know, culpability, responsibility, wrongdoing. I don't want to comment on incomplete data right now, but people have to be held accountable, and the community should expect that, including they should expect the Police Accountability Board to be held accountable, including through hard questions by you, Evan.
Okay, that's fair enough. And I think we are, I mean, inevitably we will see more information about what happened since, you know, March 23rd onward with the chief, with the department, with the city, when these investigations, these multiple investigations, bear more fruit. And for listeners who have contacted the program saying you should get Laron Singletary on the program, we have tried and we will try. He has not ever come on this program. Obviously, he's not the chief now. Based on the comments from his legal counsel, I doubt he would do that. I've made it clear that I think that the emails he sent in the days following the death of Daniel Prude indicate that he was lying and misrepresenting intentionally about the circumstances and even what the ME said. But if there's context I'm missing, I would love for him to have a chance to come on the program and correct me on that. He has not accepted that invitation. I think the community still needs a lot more information, and we are all hopeful that we will get it there. Connor, what's your relationship like with Mayor Lovely Warren?
You know, Mayor Warren, on the second day of my job, you know, Mayor Warren emailed and said, you know, we need the Police Accountability Board to be part of this task force, this working group for this governor's executive order. Mayor Warren's been nothing but open lines of communication, keeping us involved in this work. And I hope and expect that will continue because, you know, every part of this government, whoever's leading it, whatever, we all have to be in this together. And so, you know, Mayor Warren reached out, I believe, Wednesday to congratulate me on my confirmation. So I wanted to thank her for that.
Okay. Any other concerns that your work could be politicized or sort of influenced by, you know, political machinations in any way?
Politics is part of the game. Politics is we're a government agency. Of course, this is a hot button issue in this community. Politics is all about it. And the best thing that we can do is follow the law, be transparent in all of our work, and communicate with the community constantly, asking them, how are we doing our work? What should we be doing? What are your priorities for public safety? I think if we focus on those things, we're going to be able to sail through whatever bumpy waters are in front of us.
Have you had any conversations with Mike Mazzeo, head of the union?
You know, I one of the first people I emailed was Mike, and then we're going to be setting up a meeting soon.
Are you optimistic that you can have a civil and productive relationship, given some of his comments about the PAB in the past?
Well, there's no doubt that the Locust Club, you know, they're the ones that filed that lawsuit against the board that's causing us some trouble right now. But regardless of how people perceive the board, they have to know that we are willing to listen to them. And we might disagree. We might not, you know, implement any recommendations that people give us. But we're here to listen to everybody, period. And my door is always open.
Bob in Brighton on the phone next. Go ahead, Bob.
Thanks, Evan, and thank you for the conversation in general here.
Sure.
I just have a comment that kind of builds on I think it was Connor, or it may have been someone else who said something about culture and police culture. And I would hope that in this process of the city that there's some help from the Joe Morelli, from our political powers and corporate powers above and outside of the city. What am I talking about? Defunding the police was a real mistake from a communication standpoint. I understood it, but when you take three pages to explain what you mean, you're undercutting your own goals, which I agree with. What I would recommend that this group and board and hopefully with help from the larger institutions looks at, demilitarize the police. When you've got the equivalent of an army force in the community, it would be natural in their culture, including recruiting, et cetera, to think of others as the enemy. And that has to stop. And I look forward to the work of the Police Accountability Board and the community coming together. But start with demilitarizing. Thanks.
Okay, Bob, thank you. Connor Dwyer Reynolds, what do you think?
Well, I think Chair Wilson would have some fantastic responses to this, too, so I'll keep mine brief. What I'll say is I think that change in the culture is important, and I think that idea of adversarial relationship, understanding, does that exist here? How does it exist here? Excuse me, and how did it come about? You know, in so many police academies across the country, one of the first videos you view is of a police officer responding to a mental health crisis and being killed. You know, and what does it mean to have from day one understanding your job as one of constantly under the threat of lethal violence? What does that do to you as a person? And so that's why it's so important that we make transparent how our police officers become police officers, how they understand their role in this community, how they're trained to understand their role in this community. Because, it's, you know, when you talk about demilitarization, people can focus on things like, you know, something that looks like a tank or, you know, some kind of particular gun. But it's more fundamentally about, again, culture, perception, how does this get instilled into people through institutions? But again, I know Chair Wilson has some things to say about this.
Okay, Shani Wilson.
Yeah, so, I mean, just to kind of reference previous discussions, you know, I think, you know, I completely agree about demilitarizing the police. I think that, you know, as long as you see everybody as a combatant, that's exactly, and that you're told that from the beginning of your training, then that is how you're going to see everyone, right? And then remember, I mean, you're building that not just on teaching, but also emotional reinforcement, right? On fear, on hypervigilance, right? And I think too that it's like, you know, when you don't live, and if you don't have people around you that look like you, that you are essentially like controlling, right? With your weapons, with your voice, with your you know, being able to take somebody down and do all that other stuff, then of course you're going to think, that's another way that you're going to think of somebody as scary, different. You know, media reinforces that as well. And that also too, you know, systemic and institutional racism also is the icing on that cake, right? That, you know, we, you know, that certain, you know, black and brown people are dangerous, that, you know, they have to be monitored and, you know, kept small and kept enclosed, that, you know, we instead, you know, need to be able to, you know, teach that, you know, that groupthink, stop the groupthink, to make sure that, you know, everybody is seen as people, humans, not just as combatants. So I agree.
Okay, let me get an email from Steven, who says, Evan, I'm a member of the 19th Ward Community Association. We have regular meetings with police in our area to improve the relations. What I assume community policing is what we are trying to accomplish. At the last meeting, it was reported that there was a small spike in criminal activity in Southwest Rochester. The representative from the 19th Ward Community Association asked, how can we combat this spike in crime? She was told the only way to fight crime was to protest the decision to relax bail laws in New York State. When our member asked if a letter-writing campaign would be helpful to request changing the bail reform laws, she was told that was useless and only physical protesting as a way to change the justice system. The response from the police was offensive in many ways. One, that bail reform is the reason that there is more violence in the area, is a one-sided argument. There's lots of evidence about how bail laws impact poor families disproportionately. There's less evidence that they're relaxing is what is driving the spike in crime in our community. Second, that protesting the laws is the only way to make change. Third, it speaks to the vast gulf that exists between police and the community. Bail reform is no doubt popular in Southwest Rochester, judging from the prevalence of Democrats in our local politics. How out of step are we with the police when they fail to offer actual solutions to crime besides protesting bail reform? What does your guest believe is the best way to realign community priorities with the police? This is a wide gap. Or better yet, bring police to heel, in a sense, on this. That's from Stephen. Connor Dwyer Reynolds, go ahead.
Well, I think the first way to realign priorities is to make sure that all of our communities in Rochester have a seat at the table and are having their voices heard. And, you know, I think we've been talking a lot in abstract terms. I'm very glad that Chair Wilson interjected race, because that's what this is about. That's what this is about, especially, you know, all black lives matter. And the fact that so many black voices have not been, black and brown voices have not been being heard, listened to. And bail reform is a great example of that. You know, bail reform is a fantastic example of that, of a policy that responded to black and brown desires and voices and is not being understood in some communities because of the lack of those voices being at the table. So I think, you know, I can't comment on these. But I'm learning all this now through this reader's email. I'm very interested to hear more about this. about this, these directions about advocacy, apparently, that I'd love to know more about. But again, you know, when we talk about demilitarization, reimagining, we have to be talking about things like white supremacy, the way white supremacy infects so many of our institutions. And if we don't discuss that openly, if we don't have open conversations about that, we're not going to have the fundamental change we need when it comes to policing, public safety, or anything else.
Shawnee Wilson, anything you want to add to Stephen in the 19th Ward?
Yeah, well, thank you, Stephen, for your email, first of all. I think that's wonderful that you're questioning and demanding and then disappointed by the lack of, you know, perceived, you know, like the two-dimensional answer that you were given by that police officer. You know, I would say that really it's about, you know, and I'm, you know, really it's about those questions, right? And it's about the fact that, you know, police are, you know, kind of reduced down to this, like, a kind of, you know, patrol system that just kind of keeps people insulated and also, you know, separates good people from bad people, right? Evan, you and I have talked about that before, you know, and, you know, really, you know, people understand and they're frustrated by that. And I guess, you know, I would say that, you know, I would just continue to put community pressure on demanding more answers and demanding more access to answers, you know, and that's really where the PAB comes in as far as like, you know, asking for better training and education, because I want a police officer to say, well, you know what? We understand, you know, A, B, C, and D on, you know, why these, you know, we've looked at the data for the 19th Ward. We've come up with these three, you know, incidences where we, you know, looking at the demographics of who was involved. You know, we've tried to look at, you know, what the data is telling us. And instead of being like, oh, bail reform, it's instead being like, you know what? We realize that the community, you know, COVID has happened. You know, there might be an uptake in crime because, you know, of a lack of access to, you know, to some monetary resources or something like that. And so here's another way that we can help to make sure that there's, you know, food kitchens or that there's like a, for like an increase in hours for like food pantries or something like that. Like something that has like a reassuring answer for the community that seems to be well thought out. You know, these are the things that we need to be teaming up with police on, right? That they have to understand how poverty is working in Rochester. There has to be a thorough understanding, especially if you're going to have a weapon and that you can use your weapon to do something to someone else. Your weapon obviously is the last resort in any situation, or it shouldn't be a resort at all. But, you know, it should always be a community partnership. And when you have a thorough understanding of that partnership, then actually change needs to happen.
Let me try to squeeze in two more quick questions for Connor before the hour's out. Leslie says, when it comes to training, we've been hearing that even in the recent deaths and killings, she references Daniel Prude, police say, well, we just followed the training. We followed it to the letter. And she's essentially asking, do you accept that, Connor Dwyer Reynolds? And does the PAB have a role in assessing whether that training was followed and what the training ought to look like in the first place?
Well, first, I want to make clear, I'm not going to comment on a specific case that may come before the board for procedural reasons, interest of fairness. I can comment on this general problem of people saying, you know, well, we're just following procedures. If the community clearly perceives an incident to be wrong, you know, saying we follow the rules isn't an answer. It means the rules need to change. And yes, the Police Accountability Board does have that role. We are, under the city charter, quote, the mechanism for reviewing RPD policies, practices, and procedures and recommending new ones. So absolutely, this is the vehicle to get some of these things changed.
All right, last question comes from a retired officer who asked not to use his name, says, I appreciate this conversation, yet no one involved in the conversation has any law enforcement experience. This is like people intending to oversee doctors who have zero health care experience other than having been sick themselves. What do you make of that, Connor, that criticism?
Well, again, I think it's a bit of a misunderstanding that, you know, the leadership of this board are experts in public safety, and they are from this community. They know how to work with police, and they know what it's like to be police. That's expertise we need. But my response to police officers who are concerned that this board won't have their perspectives involved is, we want to hear from you. And my hope is that when we reach out and ask for officer input, ask for officer perspectives, we get those perspectives. Because, you know, if that's the concern, that this accountability board doesn't have the expertise we need, well, you can help us get some of that expertise.
All right.
Evan, can I add
20 seconds. Go ahead, Shawnee. Yep.
So, look, as a medical professional, you know, my patient care advocacy groups make sure that I do my job better. And they fold it into everything that I do every day to make sure that my patients' voices are heard. And they are not medical professionals themselves. They are being taken care of by me. And so just like I hope that is also understood as far as, like, I don't have to know my job, but I do have to know what it does to me, right? So that's all I have to say.
All right. Well, I want to thank our guests for being with us. And Shawnee, of course, we've talked to you, and I know we're going to talk in the future. Mm-hmm. The chair of the Rochester Police Accountability Board. Always good, and thank you for making the time for us.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Connor Dwyer Reynolds, I know we've interacted quite a bit online, but it's nice to talk to you, the executive director of the Rochester Police Accountability Board. And in the interest of transparency, I hope you can be back with us with some routine and regularity. Not to say that you are the only one from the board that matters. I mean, there's going to be a lot of voices, but I hope we can talk to you with some frequency.
Evan, anytime.
You're going to regret that. Connor Dwyer Reynolds, the new executive director of the Rochester Police Accountability Board. More connections coming up.